Hello, this is Chris English with another edition of our magazine programme At Home This Morning, which we hope will provide you with a window to our world, both in and around our city of Brighton Hove and further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this programme, we'll be hearing from Mel Stoner about a new scheme in which a local theatre company called Boss are donating tickets to their next show to those who otherwise couldn't afford to go. I'll also be chatting to Silvio Grasso about the next concert by the renowned Brighton Gay Men's Chorus, and there'll be my review of the recent performances of the musicals Evita and Fame at the Theatre Royal. And talking about musicals, I'll be asking our local Coronation Street bad boy, Brian Capron, to tell us all about his role in the new production of Dr. Dolittle. And as plans for the latest developments at Bright Marina are published, I'll be finding out more from the company's chief executive, Kate Sullivan. All that and more is to come in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's produced by Grey Matters Productions for Brighton's only real local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, and online at radioreverb.com. But first up, I spoke to Mel Stoner from the amateur theatre company Boss, which used to be called Brighton and Hove Operatic Society, who first explained what their new production is all about.
We are putting on a production of Priscilla later on this year, and one of the highlights of the week is going to be our Friday matinee, which is at 4 o'clock on the 7th of December. And we are going to be hosting as many local people from charities as possible that can come and see the show for free. So the idea is it's a kind of pay it forward scheme, and we're asking members of the public and local businesses to donate tickets for those in the community who would otherwise be unable to come and see the theatre.
We'll come back to Priscilla in a moment, but how does the scheme work?
So the scheme works. We have a BT My Donate page, and the idea is that we've selected 20 local charities, and with a broad representation of different genres across the city. And we then ask for donations, and then in a couple of weeks we'll add up everything we've raised, and then we work out how many tickets we can give out. So currently we've raised enough for 70 tickets, so 70 people will be able to come and see the show for free.
I mean, this is a very novel thing. I've never heard of this before.
Have you not heard of it?
Is it fairly common? Where did the idea come from?
Well, I don't know how common it is in the theatre. I think Brighton Festival do something similar. They do a pay it forward type scheme, which we didn't know about actually until after we decided to put this together. I've heard about it. It was an American film, I think probably about 10, 15 years ago, called Pay It Forward. And that was all about somebody doing good for somebody else and not having something necessarily back in return, but just, then the snowball effect of what that good deed does for somebody else, really. And that's where we got the idea. And it's the first time we've actually done it for this show. This is our first campaign.
So if somebody's listening to this and think, well, I can't afford to buy tickets to the theatre, I'd like to go if there's a free ticket. How can they go about getting tickets?
Well, we've actually pretty much assigned all of our tickets to 20 local charities. So if you're part of one of those charities, a beneficiary of one of those, you could speak to the head of that charity to see if you're on that list. But if you really, really would like to come and you're not one of those charities, then just get in touch with us.
And you are, because we haven't actually said who you're working for.
No, so I volunteer for BOSS, which is also known as Brighton Hove Operatic Society. And we are a charitable theatre company that have been around since 1886. And last year, my husband took over as chairman of the society, and we had a bit of a revamp and new logo and all that kind of thing. So, yes, that's who we are.
So that's where Beehives came from.
Yes.
Now let's go back to Priscilla,
mm-hmm.
her full title, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yes, that's right.
What's it about?
So it's a very flamboyant, fun, fizzy, fantastic show. And it's a musical that's based on the iconic movie, which was made, I believe, in the 90s. And it features lots of hits. I Will Survive, Boogie Wonderland, Venus. There's some really fun disco hits in it.
So and it, some people might say it's a disco musical,
yeah,
it?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, ABBA have done very well, haven't
they? Absolutely, yeah. But this features songs from lots and lots of different artists. And it's really fun, a really good feel-good show. But basically, the idea is that the show tells the tale of three friends as they journey through Australia on their bus, Priscilla. And it tells the tales of all the adventures that they have along the way.
Now, the show has been in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
It's toured.
Yeah.
You're an amateur company, so how come that you get to perform it?
Shows get released to amateurs. Some never get released to amateurs, but luckily Priscilla is one that has been. So we're very fortunate to be putting that on in this area. And we're also really fortunate that we have Lucy Newton, who is performing as one of our fantastic divas, and she actually performed in the West End as a diva as well. So we're really lucky to have her on board as a diva, but also as associate director on this project, along with her sister Tanya Newton.
And do you get to perform?
I do get to perform. I am going to be playing the part of Marion, and Marion is the ex-wife of one of the lead characters that takes this trip across the desert.
You talked about the bus. In the various stage versions, they created a bus.
Yes.
So are you going to create a bus?
We are creating a bus. So our production is on at the Old Market, and it's, you know, the space is fantastic for this musical, and we're really pleased to be going there. But obviously it's not necessarily big enough for a massive coach. So my husband's actually designed a bus. It's actually based on a camper van style, because it seems to fit the space really well, and we wanted to put a bit of a unique flip on the bus, because I think it's one of the questions everybody asks, oh, how are you going to do the bus? And so rather than try and pretend we've got this massive bus on stage like they do in the film, we're making it fit the space and work for us. And we really like the idea that we're doing something a bit different with it.
And when's it on?
So the show is on from the 4th to the 8th of December at the Old Market.
And that's in Hove. And we talk about the scheme, mm-hmm. but can people buy tickets anyway from the box office?
Yeah, we've actually pretty much sold out. The idea will be that at the 4 o'clock performance on the Friday, any tickets that don't get donated, we will have to put on general sale. So there might be a possibility of getting tickets to that performance.
And are you looking forward to the show itself?
Yeah, really looking forward to it. I haven't done a show for a few years because I've had a little boy, and that's kept me very busy. So this is the first thing I've done for a while. And yeah, I've really enjoyed brushing off my dancing shoes and getting up there again, really.
And the all-important contact details.
Okay, so we would love to receive any donations from anybody. Anything from £1 to £20, which is the full price of a ticket, would be really appreciated. Or obviously you can buy a block of tickets if you wanted to donate that. And that would be by going online. And if you search BT My Donate Sit Together, you'll find that campaign there. And you'll be able to just donate online. And if you wanted to contact me or anybody at the organisation, if you email mel, at bhos.org, and we'll get back to you.
That production is on at the Old Market in Hove from the 4th to the 8th of December. Also taking place on the 8th of December, this time at the Brighton Dome, will be the Brighton Gay Men's Chorus pre-Christmas show. It's called Pull a Cracker, and to tell us more, Here's their PR guru, Silvio Grasso.
We are preparing for our annual Christmas performance called Pula Kraka Christmas Comes Early with the Brighton Games Chorus. And we're actually returning to the Brighton, the Dome Concert Hall. So that's a quite amazing venue to go back to.
I mean, it's a huge venue, isn't it? I mean, it's 2,000.
I believe it's the biggest venue in the southeast of its kind, yes. So, definitely in Brighton anyway. So
what's it like performing at a venue like that?
It's amazing, obviously. I won't deny that. I think any performances are quite amazing. The space is lovely, and since the restoration a few years back, the venue has a great acoustic and is used by well-renowned performers around the world simply because of that, of the amazing space. But the audience makes a difference. So obviously, performing to a big audience is quite nice, but we have such a lovely followers. There is always a pleasure to perform for them.
Talking about the chorus itself, now its title is the Brighton Gay Men's Chorus. Does that mean you have to be gay to participate?
Surprisingly enough, no, you don't. we are part of is an international queer choir movement, which was started in San Francisco the year actually the Harvey Milk was killed. And so the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus was the first Gay Men's Chorus actually was created, and then the spirit in many different cities in the States first and then around the world were created. And although originally it was more like a political movement, the center of it now is really about music. There's always a message, of course, one way or another with music, but our membership is open to anybody that self-identifies as men. And the only requirement is they need to be LGBTQ friendly. So in effect, we do have members that are not gay.
What about the audience?
Oh, the audience, absolutely anybody. In fact, we pride ourselves to be a family friendly performance group, and it's lovely to see sometimes children in the audience and really enjoy themselves. And sometimes we might do a few jokes that they would go over their heads, yeah. And they're more for their parents. But we have some of our members that have kids themselves, and so then they can watch their daddies.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, wonderful. You've called it Christmas Cracker, so is it full of Christmas songs?
Yes, the Christmas Cracker is our traditional name, umbrella name, when we perform at the Dome. So, and then we have, we have like a subtitle, like in this case, Christmas Comes Early. But it is Christmassy in a sense that the we don't do concerts as such. Sometimes we do, but we're proud of the fact that we do shows. So there is a script, there are actors involved, there are sketches, and there is a storyline. And of course, it's all around Christmas and the journey of the members are going through in this show, particularly.
But it's fun.
Oh God, absolutely. Well, I hope so. I like to think so. I mean, if you look at people. Faces and time is not always we can because the way the lighting works, but it is there's something. It's lovely to hear people laughing and applauding, but there's the glimpse in time when we can actually see the faces and there's a joy about it. Is performing is great, and especially when you perform in a group because it's much more supported. Although we do give space to individuals and duets and small ensemble to perform as well within the chorus. But none of us audition. We are no auditioning choir. So we are community choir. We audition for the soloist. So we have an internal process, very open and transparent, and people come forward with some ideas. But all of us, they don't have, we have despite that we don't audition, we are extremely, extremely lucky. We have some amazing, amazing performers within the course itself. So yeah, it's quite a good laugh, it's quite good fun.
Sylvia, at the risk of giving the game away and spoiling the surprise on the night, what numbers are you going to sing at the concert at the Dome?
Well, Chris, you have to come and watch. it's mixed. The good thing about the way that we do our shows is that we have a theme, and then we bring our songs around the theme. So we do have absolutely Christmas songs themselves, things like Christmas Baby Come Home, or Silent Night, or Shoe on the Shining Night. I just realized we've got three songs that have night in it. Anyway, might be something about the Christmassy. Is that we have a quite big program. We have over 25 songs, which I believe is one of the biggest as a numbers for many choirs that they are going to watch. And plus, on top of that, and we have our soloists as well. Half of them is Christmas songs, but we do have a Christmas spirit with the other ones that we sing as well. And we go cover them. They're a little bit of a surprise. They'll be quite fun. There's one in particular that I'm very fond of, which I can't say anything. But let's say that it will have people in hysterics. It's going to be really, really fun.
Wonderful. It sounds like a real fun evening. Tell me the date, how you get tickets, and the price of tickets, that sort of thing.
Sure. So the tickets, we try to make it, you know, quite affordable. So we have a cross range. We start from just £10, and then we go £14 and £19 and £24. The beauty with the Dome, no matter where you sit, is a quite amazing experience. So there's not a restriction as such. They can be purchased by directly from the Dome box office. So they can do it by phone if they want to, which is on 01273 709 709, or they can go to their website, which is brightondome.org, or from our website, which is brightongmc.org, or even better, through one of our members as well. If you know one of the guys from the course, tell us you want some tickets, and then if you take it from us, we'll avoid the booking fee as well.
Even better. I hate the booking fees.
I know, it's a necessity. And the event will take place on Saturday, the 8th of December. The venue will open at 6:45 and the show will start at 7:30.
And how long will it last, roughly?
It's about 2 hours, you know, with a bit, of course, there'll be an interval. Then we have the bar open afterwards as well. And we have given a reputation because apparently last year the bar ran out of booze. So we prepared them to say that, you know, we need more. But yeah, it's great because after the performance, people love to hang around and talk to the guys. And because, I think that's a testament to having a good night and having a really lovely and entertaining evening.
And it's a fun evening.
It's a fun evening. And within the fun, you know, of course, we always have some messages and we... we look at what's happening around us, but more importantly, we always make sure that we try to raise awareness and funds for other charities that we like to support. So Pula Kraka this year will be not a change in a sense. In fact, what we do, we always ask our members to suggest charities that want to be supported, and then the trustees will see the options. And so this year we're supporting again the Sussex Beacon, and also our rehearsal home, the Blood Unitarian Church. They have a problem with the restoration, and therefore we decided to help them as well. It's part of the Unitarian Building Appeal Fund, so we'll help for that as well.
Now let's find out about the fascinating new project that hopefully you can take part in. And with me in the studio from Brighton University is
Leslie Murray and
Eva Barilla.
Now, even for start, that's not an English name.
No, it's not. I'm from Finland. I work at the University of Eastern Finland.
And what brings you to Britain and Brighton?
Well, I'm working for a project that's now taking place in three European cities, and Brighton is one of the cities, and I'm doing field work now. here in Brighton.
And Leslie?
So Ava is working alongside me at the University of Brighton. The project's actually led by the University of Eastern Finland, which is why we have our colleagues over from Finland. And this is a project that is trying to understand a bit more about how different generations experience the environments around them, on the basis that older generations have grown up with the use, without the use rather, of new technologies, and the current generations experience their environments around them with new technologies on a very everyday basis. So we want to understand the difference between those who grew up with the use of new technologies and those who didn't.
I mean, talking personally with myself and my grandchildren, if something goes wrong with my phone, they're the people I turn to. Is that something fairly common?
It is fairly common, but actually that's one of the ideas that we want to try and challenge or resist. That idea that it's younger people who are very comfortable with technologies and older people are less comfortable. Of course, that is often the case. But we don't want to kind of pigeonhole people into those that are very comfortable and those that aren't according to age. But we want to understand how someone who grew up with new technologies uses them in different ways, I think. Not necessarily knows more about them, but we want to start off with the idea that everyone has access to them, but they have a different experience through their lifetime.
And as I spoke in the introduction, this is something that hopefully some of our listeners can take part in. How can they do that?
Yes, so we're very keen to recruit people who have grown up in Brighton in the 1950s and 60s. So that is people who were born up until 1949 into the research. And they would take part in walks with a younger person. So they would take part in two walks. One walk, they would decide the route, and the other walk, the younger person would decide the route. And our researcher would go along and we would film and record those walks.
Eva, how come it's got involved in Finland? I mean, it's lovely to have you here, but where does the connection with the UK come from?
The project is actually led by a Finnish professor, Helmi Järviloma, from the University of Eastern Finland, and we have a big group of researchers in three European cities. So we have Turku in Finland, Ljubljana in Slovenia, and then Brighton here in the UK, so it's a pretty big project located in three sites.
And what's the end result of the project? What do you hope to achieve?
Well, the aim is to provide new understandings of how people relate to and experience their environment. And
so is that so that you as professors in universities can determine what the future holds for both old and young? Or will we as older people actually benefit from it?
Well, for example, the results of the research can be utilized in urban planning or city planning when we understand better how people experience the urban spaces. So I think that benefits all the generations.
I mean, one of the things that's in the news at the moment is about reducing the use of the private car and emissions and traffic congestion. But of course, for older people, they rely on their car to get about because buses and other forms of transport aren't necessarily accessible. So could your research be involved in helping town planners?
Yes, I think it definitely will. I mean, walking is a big part of the project and learning about how people walk through their environments. So there are lots of barriers, of course, to especially older people walking about. There's quite often obstacles on the way or else people don't take advantage of the way that technologies can help them walk. And that means that people are often reliant on other forms of travel, like the car. We want to understand a little bit more about that and inform policymakers and urban planners.
And again, there's lots of talk at the moment about the future of movement. What's your vision for the future?
I hope the future is one that people have a say in the transport options that are available for them, and that we use travel options that don't hurt the environment. But who knows? Who knows what we'll see?
And to get back to the project, if the idea has fascinated people listening, they should get in touch and take part.
Yes, we're very, very keen to have a range of people taking part. Half of the people that we recruit will be artists, so we are keen to have artists, and that can mean, I mean, that's a very broad definition, so it can mean anyone, painters, musicians, chefs, sculptors, people who would perhaps define themselves as artists. But we don't just need artists. Half of the people are artists, but we're looking for people born up until 1949, or younger people born between 1990 and 2005, to take part in the research and to contact us.
And Leslie, how can people get in touch if they would like to find out more?
So you could get in touch by filling out the form on our website, which is www.uef.fi/SENSOTRA. Or you can contact me at the University of Brighton on 01273 644558, or my email is l.murray@brighton.ac.uk.
Right, OK, well, we'll repeat all that at the end of the programme. In the meantime, thank you both for coming in, and let's hope the project's a success, and we look forward to hearing more about it in the future.
Thank you very much for having us.
Hearing there from Eva Paella and Leslie Murray from Brighton University. Now, regular listeners will recall that in a recent edition of At Home This Morning, we heard from Glenn Carter, who's been playing Shay in the new tour of Evita. Evita is, of course, the famous dramatised story of Eva Perón, the woman who rose from obscurity to become the wife of Juan Perón, the leader of Argentina. And with a score by Andrew Lloyd Webber and lyrics by Tim Rice, the show has captivated audiences around the world since its premiere in 1976. A packed house were in place for the show when it opened at the Theatre Royal in Brighton on a Tuesday evening. And what a tremendous show it is. With a surprisingly large cast for a touring production, an equally large and talented band, and the stunning and incredibly talented Lucy O'Byrne in the title role, supported by Mike Sterling as Perón, and of course Glenn Carter as Shay, and not forgetting Christina Hui, who as the deposed mistress sings the haunting Another Suitcase in Another Hall with absolute passion. However, I found that the audience reaction was slightly muted for the show, and I'm not quite sure why. And indeed, when I saw Fame at the same theatre in the last couple of days, the same thing happened. Can't think why. Perhaps it's the Brighton audiences. But you mustn't let the musings of a tired old hack put you off going to see Evita, either on this tour, which has now, of course, left Brighton, but you should catch up with it if you can. Now, hot on the heels of Evita, another musical has stormed its way into the Theatre Royal, this time in the form of the classic Fame, which tells the story of the journey of a group of young people through the hallowed halls of the New York High School for the Performing Arts. The story, which started out as a 1980s Alan Parker film before morphing into a television series, then finally a stage musical, focuses on the successes, or in one case, tear-jerking failure, of the young students, and takes in along its way themes like dyslexia, colour prejudice, and of course, love. The innovative set, which comprises huge backlit photographs of the original members of the famous New York School, known to millions as simply PA, worked well on the Theatre Royal stage to provide a truly wonderful evening's entertainment that fully echoes the tagline, "You want fame? Well, fame costs, and right here is where you start paying." Now it's time to hear all about the latest plans for Brighton Marina. And yes, that does mean more flats. But to explain how and where and what it's all about, here's the Marina Company's CEO, Kate Sullivan.
We have a planning permission at the moment for what we call the Outer Harbour area, which is by the Spending Beach and behind the David Lloyd and the other leisure facilities at the marina. And that permission was granted in 2006 for 853 homes, and phase one has been completed. And when we've come to look at phases two and three, we've decided that actually the design needs to be updated. The permission's 12 years old, and so we're looking at reviewing those designs, and actually decided to put in a new planning application in 2019.
There's a consultation going on. What does that involve?
We've got a consultation happening where we invite anybody with any interest in the marina designs, whether they're a resident or they work at the marina or they live in the wider Brighton area, to come along and have a look at the early designs that we've put together, just to give us their thoughts, their comments, their feedback. We're just keen to take on board everybody's views and where we can to weave those into the design as it progresses towards an application.
There have been objections in the past. Will they continue, do you think?
I'm sure there will be objections because not everything can please everybody all of the time, but we do feel that this is a really positive improvement on the existing permission. So it delivers much needed housing for Brighton. And we are very much designing it with local people who live and work in Brighton in mind, rather than for an international market. And we think that's a real improvement on the existing permission.
The marina has never quite taken off, has it? I mean, it's a haven for a yachtsman and a boat owner. But as far as a development, a place to come to, it's never quite worked.
No, there are pockets within the marina which I think really do work, and places within the marina where there really is a sense of community and they are a really nice place to be, whether you're here as a visitor or as a resident or as a berth holder. But there are definitely other areas within the marina where you don't have that same sense. And we're really hoping that this new permission will kickstart some regeneration of the marina as a whole. And we're hoping that we can really lead with this area to show that the place can be improved with the introduction of more public spaces, better connectivity. We'd like to improve the pedestrian routes around this particular area of the site. And hopefully that will be something that throughout the next few years is followed on within other areas.
Do you think it would benefit for becoming more villagey? I mean, it was always going to be called Brighton Marina Village, but as I said earlier, that never quite happened. So will the open space part of the new development achieve that?
We're really hoping so. We're really keen to ensure that we create opportunities to build community in this new planning application in the area of the Outer Harbour. And in order to build community, you have to give people spaces, both private outside spaces, but also communal outside spaces where people can gather and get to know their neighbours and that kind of thing. And we're really mindful of that when we've been putting the designs and as we work through the designs for this permission.
Now, one of the criticisms in the past has been the price of property at the marina, and it's only for the rich or those from overseas. So is there an element of affordable housing?
So there's two parts to that answer. So the one of the big drivers behind doing a new planning application is actually to make the build costs, the design, much more affordable. So lower construction costs, which means the sale price of the apartments can be for the people who live and work within Brighton rather than for an overseas market. And the other element of that is in terms of the affordable housing for the council that we wish to deliver. So the current permission has all of the remaining affordable housing within phase three. And what we're suggesting is that that affordable element would be split between phases two and three. So we would be delivering affordable homes for Brighton and Hove much sooner than the existing permission does.
You've got planning permission for the original scheme that you mentioned at the beginning. Why have you changed it?
The main drivers behind changing it are to do with making a scheme that's more affordable so that local people who live and work in Brighton can afford to buy them, to bring more affordable housing in line sooner, and also to improve the design to make it a much more connected area within the wider marina.
Now, of course, when we were in the past, before he retired, talking to John Davey, he was telling us about the constant battle to maintain the marina and the outer walls. Is that still ongoing?
It is. So I think the harbour walls will always need a lot of maintenance and a lot of upkeep. And one of the benefits of having more residential homes within the marina is the cost of maintaining those walls is shared amongst a greater population.
The thought of increased water levels and that we're talking about with global warming, is that something that should concern people buying a property at the marina?
I don't think it should concern people, but it is definitely something that we're mindful of. And we're really fortunate within the professional team that we've put together for the Outer Harbour to have both ACOM and AREP on board as our specialist technical advisors. And they were obviously advising us about those elements.
Go back to the consultation that's open, presumably online?
Yeah. The consultation will be available online at www.outerharbourdevelopment.co.uk from the 8th until the 23rd of November, where people can see all of the material that will have been shown at the exhibition, and also has an opportunity to provide their comments and feedback, which we would really welcome.
Is there a real chance for people to put their views forward, or is it just a political exercise?
No, this is definitely a real opportunity. We are at a very early stage, and we are really keen to hear the views of people who care, people who might be interested in living here in the future, people who live here at the moment. We really need to know what people would want to see in this development. One of our big things that we want to know is, what would people like to see at the marina to make them come and visit here? So is that more waterside walks or cafes or other public facilities? It's a great opportunity for people to tell us what would bring them down to the marina.
That was Kate Sullivan from Bright Marina. Now, regular listeners will know of my love of musicals. And so when I heard about a new production of Dr. Dolittle, the much-loved musical, which was a film, of course, originally, and although it seems it won't be coming to Brighton, one of the stars appearing in the show is our local Coronation Street bad boy, Brian Capron. And so when I caught up with Brian in the kitchen of his home a few days ago, I first asked him to explain what the show is all about.
A wonderful story about a man who learns to talk to animals so that he can help them, because he's fed up with being a boring old GP. And he gets taught these languages by his mate, the parrot Polynesia, who's played by Vicky Entwistle. And it's such a moving thing, their relationship. Some of the plot has been changed in our production, much to the better, if you like. And there is a very close relationship between Polynesia, the parrot, and him. This is the brand new version of Dr. Dolittle, because Leslie Brickers has been persuaded to rewrite some of it. They've tightened it up, and he's written three new songs. So it's a real fresh look at the show. The most interesting part to me is the fact that the animals are represented by puppets. And when I say puppets, they're not club puppets, you know. Think Warhorse. These are fantastic three-dimensional creatures which bring the show alive, and they're so colourful. And they can respond, of course, by the way that they move, and they have sounds because they're operated by performers. We also have a Broadway choreographer who's got so much flair and imagination. I mean, the numbers in it are just phenomenal. I play a part which Richard Attenborough played in the film, actually, called Albert Blossom. He's the circus owner, and he has an amazing barnstorming number called Never Seen Anything Like It, which features a double-headed llama called the Push Me Pull You. If anybody's seen the film, they might remember that or know the stories. And our Push Me Pull You is something to behold, let me tell you. It's got two performers inside it for a start, and it's you know, it's gonna be such a wonderful number, and I'm so privileged to be able to do it. In the second half, I play another part, complete opposite. So I have a completely contrasting part called Straight Arrow, who is the head of the people on a floating island called Star. Sea Star Island, which has all the animals in the world on it. And there's a little message in the whole of the show, which is about animal conservation. We're doing it in conjunction with the World Wildlife Fund, which is wonderful. So we'll be raising money for them as well, in a small attempt to try and halt all the problems that are happening to animals. So that's a little. We don't hit people over the head with that message. It's a charming message. There's some wonderful songs in this show. In the second, I would say I play this character called Straight Arrow. And he's called Straight Arrow because when he was 10 years old, he explains in the show, his father wanted to go straight to Harrow. So, Straight Harrow. That's how he got his nickname. And that's a marvellous part, and it's a complete contrast to the first part. And paradoxically enough, he's rather a David Attenborough character, so I'm playing an old Richard Attenborough part in the first half and a new David Attenborough character in the second half. And we also have Vicky Entwistle in the show, who played Janice Battersby in Coronation Street. So there's two Coronation Street people in it. And we have the wonderful Mark Williams, who lives locally in Lewes, playing Dr. Doolittle. And he's so perfect for that part. And banish all thoughts of the film after you see him, because it's completely different. He lives locally, and also the puppets were made locally at the Knoll Centre, if anybody knows that, in Hove. And I say these puppets, there are 36 puppets in the show. We have a cast of 26, and we have an 11-piece orchestra. So it's a big, big show, and 15 people behind the scenes doing the wigs and all the technical stuff. So this is a big, big musical, and we play 2 weeks everywhere we go on tour for the next year. I'm only doing it up to May because that's long enough for me as I'm getting old. Yes, it goes on for a year, and then I think it'll either go in the West End or it'll go on international tour. It's a lot of investment in the show, and it's a wonderful show. And it's the most uplifting, magical show that I've ever been part of, and I feel so proud of it. And it's staggering just to look at it in rehearsal. We've had 6 or 7 weeks rehearsal as well, which is very unusual. So yeah, Dr. Doolittle opens on 9th of November in Bromley. It's the nearest date to here, really. It is going to Southampton and Wimbledon, which is not too far away. There are no big enough theatres just in our little region here to take the show. And it's doing a month at Christmas at the Lowry Theatre, which is a wonderful theatre in Manchester.
What about musical numbers? Do you get to sing?
I do get to sing. Now, I don't call myself a singer. I'm not a musical theatre person, really, but let's say I'm a character actor who hopefully can put a song across. And certainly the song in the first half I've got is almost like a big music, an old-fashioned music hall number, if you like, which I absolutely relish, and it doesn't call for any what you might call operatic singing, so I should get away with it.
Now, the most famous song is Talk to the Animals, isn't it? But that's not your one, really.
No, Talk to the Animals is Mark's song, and all the companies sing it at some point as well. And obviously it's reprised at the end, and he does it beautifully. It's a wonderful song. The thing about Mark is he doesn't act it. He is the part. Utterly believable. And somehow, I don't know if anybody's seen War Horse and they see the emotion that they get from these puppets. This is what happens in our show. They're so charming and moving and funny. Those plot twists really add to the show as well.
And the show, generally, is it something for everybody?
Do you know, the lovely thing about this producer, John Stalker, he likes to produce family shows. He recently put out the Addams Family and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. This show is for everybody. I mean, it really is a true family show. Adults will absolutely love it. And the dancing is spectacular and the singing spectacular. And there's just one fantastic number after another. And it's moving and funny as well. But little tiny kids can come to see this show and be absolutely fascinated by these wonderful animals, represented, say, by, 36 puppets, these wonderful three-dimensional puppets that they've made.
And favourite song?
My favourite song has to be the song I'm singing, I'm afraid, which has never seen anything like it, because I'll tell you what, you never see anything like this number. It's fantastic. Oh, you know, whoever did it, it would be a great number. But it's been so wonderfully choreographed by this. He's such a unique guy we've got doing this show. And he's got me running around that stage. And it's fabulous. And as I say, featuring the Push Me Pulley, the double-headed llama, who dances and sings and does wonderful tricks and even skips. It's wonderful.
Brian, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
That was Brian Capron talking about Dr. Dolittle. And that's just about it from this edition of At Home This Morning. My thanks to all those who contributed to this programme. Mel Stoner and the Boss team, including those divas that sang for us. And for tickets, you should go to www.theoldmarket.com. Sir Silvio Grasso and the Brighton Gay Men's Chorus. And this time, for tickets, it's www.brightondome.org. To Eva and Leslie from Brighton University. And for more information on how you can help them with their project, you can email Leslie Murray at l.murray@brighton.ac.uk or look on their website, which is www.uef.fi/SENSOTRA or by phone to 01273 644 558. To Kate Sullivan from Brighton Marina, where for more information you can go to www.outerharbourdevelopment.co.uk or you can email outerharbour@brighton-marina.co.uk. And finally, of course, to Brian Capron for sharing some time on his present day off. And so until we meet next time over the airwaves, keep safe